Welcome everyone, this is All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 202, recording this on Friday the 7th of January 2017, though you may hear it a couple of days later. Rafe Blanford is at CES in Las Vegas this week, so we can't disturb him. He's trawling the floors for interesting tidbits and basically working out his day job as well. But I do have some stand-ins, first timers on the podcast. I have, first of all, James Clark. Hi there.
Hi, Steve. How are you, sir? And how, hi, listeners.
I'm very well. Just explain roughly where you are in the world.
Well, I'm in a very cold Redmond, Washington, in the US. Even though my accent may not suggest this, I work at Microsoft, but I also build apps in my spare time, and I think that's what we're going to be talking about today.
And how long have you been in the USA?
I've been here just over 10 years. I moved over in 2006, and so I'm getting quite used to it.
Wow. Okay. And also with us, we have Mark Osborne. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Steve. Hello, listeners. How are you doing today?
And the same question to you. Where are you roughly and how long have you been there?
Once again, it's a deception. I am a Brit, but I'm an expat Brit. I'm calling in from San Diego today, where I'm a lead software engineer for a real estate company called CoStar. And actually, today it is raining in San Diego, so I'm feeling very in touch with my British roots. So, not all sunshine.
Indeed. It's pouring with rain here at the moment and freezing cold, so you're not missing much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So what connects you two? I mean, I obviously know that, but explain to the listeners, maybe James, what connects the two of you?
Well, it's funny. So I've been working on a podcasting app called Brincast for actually a very long time now. I think I started working on it back in the Windows Phone 7 era. And yeah. And I think I met Mark because he became a user of the app. And I think at the time I had moved to the US, Mark was still in the UK. And then we had a very bizarre sort of mutual connection through a friend that caused us to meet on an occasion. And one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I'd managed to convince Mark to help me work on this app, and we've sort of been friends ever since, and kind of co-conspirators ever since.
So Mark, what do you do in terms? What's your role? Are you lead programmer? Is James lead programmer? What do the two of you do?
On Brincast, we kind of divide and conquer, and just do what we can. James probably takes more of the UI side of things and me a little bit more of the back end side of things, but we've really just kind of divided it 50-50 and tried to just move things forward when we can.
Yeah, I remember, James, that I was one of the first Brincast users. I think I was the one who suggested that royal purple theme, which everyone complains about to this day.
I love it, and actually I it's still my favorite theme, and I look forward to asking you for your next kind of selection of color tones, which we'll be doing for you.
Okay.
I remember that was suggested by you, Steve, actually. Mm. That's my favorite theme as well. That and the racing green are the two that I pretty much switch between. So thank you for that suggestion.
Yeah, good British colours, those, I think. What's Brincast's status at the moment, Derek? It's obviously a universal Windows platform app, but it seemed to have been like that for about a year now, and things seem to have gone quiet. So tell the listeners, maybe James first, how far has it got?
Sure. So, I mean, it's been a very interesting journey. You know, I work on the platform team at Microsoft, and one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about building Brincast is just to kind of actually use the platform that my team builds and sort of really find out what it's like to use and be a developer for. And so I've sort of been through the various stages of, you know, Silverlight to Windows Phone 8.1, where we had to do some rewriting and so on. And one of the reasons that it went quiet was that we were kind of waiting to rally around the Windows anniversary update, because that gave us a really nice base, and we decided that actually we just wanted to standardize on that because it allowed us to actually be a sort of a truly universal app. And some of the APIs that we really wanted, like, for example, the sort of single process audio, background audio model, which came out in the anniversary update, it allowed us to really simplify the code and make it better. So we kind of went quiet coming up to the anniversary update. We then worked feverishly and got a series of betas going, and then essentially, you know, just been trying to kind of stabilize and finalize the release since then.
And we've just, I think, hit a number of issues that have taken a little bit longer to debug than we'd have liked. But the good news is we can actually announce that we're pretty much done with this release. We're pretty much done with version 4. And I actually feeling very sleep deprived because I was up somewhat somewhat late last night to try and make the deadline for this recording to push a new build. And so we have a new public beta build that went to the store last night. Also, the first kind of release candidate also went to the store last night, and that's in certification now. So, it's been a long road, but we're kind of nearly there.
So, Mark, does the single process downloading thing actually work now? Is that fully locked down, or are you still waiting for Microsoft to fix things in their code?
No, we think we're pretty much there now, and we've had some really good test cases from people like yourself and some of our user groups. But yeah, to kind of elaborate on that, we were ready with a version of Bringcast when the first release of Windows 10 came out. But back in that time frame, the universal Windows platform was missing a few key pieces that we used to have in the Silverlight world. And Bringcast obviously started life as a Silverlight for Windows Phone app.
Yeah.
So we technically had something ready, but we had a load of code in there that we needed to do to jump through hoops because of the need to have the foreground app communicate with the background. And there's a load of hoops you have to jump through to keep it nice and high level. With the anniversary update, or Redstone 1, as James likes to refer it, being on the inside, Microsoft finally, you know, simplified a lot of stuff in UWP and gave us some feature parity back that has enabled us to really simplify the code and finally focus on fixing some of those bugs with the downloading and the audio, whereas before there was a load of hand waving to try and even make it work, if that makes sense. So that's our well-rehearsed excuse about why it's been taking so long, but we're feeling really good about things now, and you know, the future's looking bright. So
the future's looking bright. It's looking royal purple. Yes, yes.
Indeed.
So would you think about another week or so for the full public release of this new version 4?
Yeah, I mean, I pushed it to the store last night. Some early testing has definitely sort of proved out that there were multiple issues we were seeing, and actually in the next version that's coming out, we've moved to a single process model for the feed scanning as well as the audio playback, and that allows us to make further simplifications, and it also allowed us to just debug some of these weird cases where it was doing a feed scan, it was finding a new episode and triggering a download, but for some reason it was getting confused and not understanding that actually, yes, I did download this, and you had to sort of go in and select an episode, and it was like, ah, yes, I've got the file after all.
Yeah.
So things like that have been really simplified. As an expat Brit, I listened to a show called Best of Today from Radio 4, and they actually sort of kick out about 4 or 5 podcast episodes a day. And so I've been, that's sort of my benchmark test. Like, do I get those 4 episodes? And this morning I had 4 different notifications saying that they were there. And when I opened the app, yes, sure enough, they downloaded, and it told me that they were actually downloaded. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. I mean, clearly it could be misplaced, but I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that we've nailed this one now.
Yeah. You guys may have seen that there are, of course, other Podcatcher UWP apps out there, and I've been looking at OneCast, Grover Pro, and Cast, which I've just posted up before the site went down. Cast has now been renamed as Podcast, rather confusing. Maybe it's trying to inherit Microsoft's original 8.1 podcast app mantle. But so there are at least 3 other fairly professional Podcatcher UWP apps. Which one do you see as your main competitor?
Well, I entirely look to you, Steve, and actually I think I'll sort of go back to a little story of, I think one of the first interactions we had was you did a very epic review a year or two ago that literally sort of went through every single, I think at the time these were not universal. I think there were something like sort of 13 or 14 of them at that point, and I remember you doing an incredibly thorough and awesome review of all of these, and so I think these days, you know, I definitely look to you, and I think, you know, you've stated that Grover Pro is probably, you know, the most feature rich solution yeah. out there. Yeah. To be honest, because we've been heads down just trying to ship four, we've been in the mode of trying to sort of desperately not add new features, but just stabilize and ship. And so, you know, we're definitely sort of coming up for air now and thinking, you know, where do we want to go next? What's the right set of things to go build? And so I think I definitely want to look at Grover Pro and understand, you know, what have they got that we're missing? You know, we definitely want to do some work on being a better citizen at, you know, sort of supporting more adaptive UI. And, you know, we haven't really ever spent a good amount of time polishing the sort of the desktop experience. You know, we very much, our UI is rooted in the origins of phone, and we just, you know, we wanted to get a really sort of stable core before we went off and did that. But, you know, I'd love to kind of spend some time going adaptive and working really well on the Xbox and, you know, being a, you know, really good citizen from that perspective. But certainly, Steve, we're looking forward to your next kind of shootout to see where we're deficient and what we should be doing next.
Well, I'm all for reliability and performance as opposed to just extra features for the sake of it. So, well, yes, I would like to see it on Continuum. Certainly, if you plug it into Continuum display or run it on laptop, then see slightly better use of screen real estate. And I'm sure that's something you can do, presumably without compromising the stability and maturity of the work on the phone. So it's kind of an extra bonus set of work that won't actually make you go back a few steps, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great features in the XAML framework for doing kind of adaptive UI. And, you know, we just literally have been trying to ignore that and focus on exactly what you say, which is sort of stability and performance and stuff. And I think we've definitely made some big strides there. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that we can look at some of the other things next.
Yeah. And the way Bringcast is architected is there's a portable core, which is what we kind of refer to it as, which is all of the business logic in air quotes. And by that, we mean the rules around syncing podcasts and deletion and background scanning. All of that is captured in a portable library. And then really the UI is just a shim on top. So yeah, we've been focusing on solidifying that portable core, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, podcatchers are the most popular app genre, I'd think, on the entire platform. They've always been that way, and that's why.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, my original 13 app roundup got expanded month on month, got up to about 19. And at that point, we were completely breaking the site's content management system because it could not cope with that number of words in an article. It was up to 9,000 words, and everything kept breaking. Wow. That's why I had to split it into two parts. And even then, both parts had almost a dozen apps at the end. So the 8.1 scene was rather ridiculous. I think we're only up to about 4 or 5 UWPs. So hopefully my roundup, hopefully coming out sometime in the next couple of weeks, will be slightly simpler and easier to follow, and not quite so wordy.
It's funny, it's a blessing and a curse working on a podcast app, because James and I both actually love listening to podcasts. And what we find is when you're writing your own and you're also evaluating the competition, you don't listen to many podcasts because you're kind of sat there with a critical eye looking at features and functionality, and you never actually listen to any episodes, which is kind of ironic.
yeah. Well, it's good to hear you catch up with some podcasts from home anyway. Maybe you can just pick your favorite tech podcast, each of you, just one each, maybe. Mark,
that's a great question. I love all of the Twitch shows. I think my favorite one I've been listening to recently, he says reaching for his phone just to double check, I really like Hansel Minutes, which is a Scott Hanselman podcast. Scott Hanselman, for the listeners that don't know, is a guy at Microsoft. He's like a champion for all of the Azure cloud stuff.
Okay.
And the reason I like his podcast is it's predominantly tech focused, but he also has very, very different guests on there. He has a lot of women who code, you know, whereas the majority of guests on tech podcasts are typically male, you know. So he has a lot of very, very different types of guests on there, and he's also into 3D printing and the whole makers movement, you know, making things at home, building things with Raspberry Pis and that kind of stuff. So he has some very, very interesting episodes, and they're all about 20 minutes long as well, so very nice and digestible chunks.
Okay, James, what's your favorite tech podcast at the moment?
Oh gosh, I'm really struggling with this because I subscribe to many, and I sort of dip in and out, and I definitely, you know, I'm, like Mark says, quite a big fan of Leo and the Twitch shows. I love your shows as well, Steve, a lot. I listen to things like Material. I quite like that one. Russell Ivanovich, who's the one of the authors of Pocket Casts, does this show on Android. And as a sort of multi-platform kind of guy with multiple devices, I like to sort of keep in touch with those things. But I think probably, like, you know, my heart is a developer's heart, and so I think it's either probably the MS Dev Show or .NET Rocks. I think .NET Rocks is probably the one that has the most sort of longevity for me, so I think I'll probably have to go with that one.
.NET Rocks is awesome. Yeah, that's a great show.
You mentioned Pocket Cast just now, and that's obviously my go-to app, a podcatcher, when I'm on Android. Is there any way of bridging the two so that you could import a Pocket Cast set of podcasts and feeds and play positions? Is there any kind of interoperability that's possible between two podcatchers?
I think that's an interesting question. And I think, you know, where our heads are at is clearly, no, cross-platform is a huge deal, and there are different ways of skinning the cat there. And so we're definitely thinking about, is there a way we could have a minimal playback experience on iOS and Android that had some sort of cloud sync? You know, that's one way of going. The other way of going is to say, could we interoperate with something like Pocket Casts? But I think for it to be meaningfully good, it needs to be, you know, they need some sort of API that we could access. Yeah. And you know, because really you want cloud sync so that you don't have to think about it, it just works.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have an API. I know that they've been very, very successful. And, you know, I'm a user of Pocket Cast myself. You know, that's probably the one I use most on Android right now. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of Shifty Jelly. And they've done some great stuff for podcasting. So,
yeah, well, they made a mess of the 8.1 release. Because, of course, they released the Pocket Cast for Windows Phone 8.1 with a big message saying, for all of those who are worried we just do version 1 and then run away, don't worry, you'll be proved wrong. And, of course, well, they haven't been proved wrong because they issued version 1 and a small update. And that's been it for the last two or three years. So
I know. Well, I think Russell's a bit busy building a house, from what I gather from the Material podcast. So I think he's a bit distracted. So.
That's no excuse. Anyway, I wasn't asking you for Pocket Cast's interoperability tomorrow. I was just wondering whether it's something that to just think about cross-platform and some kind of API. I guess that's down to the other applications on the other platforms more than you guys.
We're going to do something, and whether it's interoperability, whether we do our own thing, you know, we're definitely playing around with a cloud back end. And, you know, we had a prototype of this, I think, 3 or 4 years ago, and we actually had a very extensive model that was sort of very feature rich, but it was hard to ship at the time, and so we're trying to think of ways of being more agile with it going forward. But I think, you know, it's to some extent comes back to the question of, you know, how do we monetize, and do we want to sort of make the app free and then have a service that we monetize through, or, you know, are there other ways of doing it? And so I think we definitely want to have a solution, and it's really just which way turns out to be the best.
I seem to remember that your current Brinkcast model is that there's a purchase fee, and then there's some extra purchases if you want special theme packs.
We have an announcement.
Right. Stop press. You heard it here first. We've kind of evolved our purchase model, the ideas around our purchase model, I should say, over the development cycle for 4. As I said, we've kind of been working on this a while, but haven't really shipped anything yet because we were waiting for the platform features to be there. But to your point, Steve, the original sort of game plan was I think when we first launched on Phone 7, it was kind of a limited trial with only 3 feeds, and you would pay a fee to unlock all the features. What we've evolved towards now, and the version that's going through certification right now, it has the following sort of purchase model. So we really want to have a great free experience in the store, you know, so people can download Brinkcast and use it, and it's not consistently nagging and not ridiculously limited. So we really want to have a great free experience, but we realize the fact that we do need to cover our costs of, you know, 2 guys doing this in their limited free time, and ultimately cover costs of running a cloud service. So we've kind of come up with this patronage experience, if you will, more like a subscription model. You'll pay there'll be an annual in-app purchase, I guess, which can auto renew if you want it. And what that will get you is all of the features in the product, plus all the cloud features that are sort of coming in the pipeline, and that's going to be sort of priced competitively. And then additionally, to your point, there are additional theme packs that you can buy if you want to reskin the player. We've always had this romantic vision that maybe Brincast might be like the Winamp of the podcasting world. Remember, with all of its skins that you could install, you know. So,
but I think, you know, just to sort of build on what Mark said, we've also made some changes to what is in the free product. So we've essentially removed all the limits now, and we've also added a set of fairly competitive features where you can download, and you know, it's actually really, even if you don't pay us any money at all, we hope that the basic experience is good enough for most people. You know, modulo, you know, does the UI work for them? You know, does the model work for them? But in terms of what the capabilities are, we hope that you know, when you get the free version, that will satisfy a lot of people. But what we do hope is that for people that want to support us and want us to sort of improve the app, that they'll be willing to kind of help us out a little bit, you know. And as Mark says, to run cloud services costs money, and it's no longer the case that you can sort of live on borrowed time and charge nothing and pay for all this cloud money, and then it turns into a Google Reader scenario where you're hugely popular but you can't actually support the service. You know, we want to just start off with, you know, we want to build great cloud stuff, but we're going to have to, you know, cover our costs from day zero. And so hopefully we can build a fan base and get people to support us and make that successful.
I think most Windows Phone, Windows 10 mobile users are very used to paying an amount, either as in-app purchases or actually outright. If it's a serious application you're going to use for year after year, month after month, then there's absolutely no reason whatsoever why you shouldn't pay £2.79 or something out front, and maybe a yearly small cost as well. My pet hate, and I come to this because I was reviewing a game this afternoon, where there are intrusive adverts between each level and there's no way to remove them. The only monetization is through adverts with no way of removing them.
We kind of hate that as well. And so we made the decision that we weren't going to do any advertising in the app. So the free version, which has unlimited feeds and downloading and stuff, has no ads in it. So, you know, we think that, you know, you've got to have a great experience. You've got to sell people on making them love your app if you expect them to actually want to make you pay anything. And advertising is sort of an annoying thing.
My personal bugbear is nag screens. Hey, you need to do this. Or I've subscribed to 3 podcasts. I'm about to subscribe to my fourth one. And it says, oh, you can't do that. You need to buy. So what we've really tried to do with our free experience is, well, first of all, I think it's limitless podcasts, but you can't subscribe to video podcasts, for example, in the free experience. So we just hide all of that in the UI. We don't even make that visible, so there's not kind of that nag at the back of your mind, you know. And instead we just have a very clear way of, in the, you know, hamburger menu, going into the purchasables and very, very clear what you get if you support us, rather than having bits of UI that's disabled and grayed out because you didn't pay us, you know, that sort of thing. So hopefully it gels with users.
As long as it pays your guys' bills, I don't mind at all.
Thank you.
Now, tell us a bit about your own devices, what you use. People like to know. So, James, first, what's your main smartphone right now? And be honest, this is your absolute main.
I will
critical
be very honest.
Sim.
I carry 3 devices on me, and my main sim has moved between 2 of those, and it's currently in one. It's changed recently to one quite recently. So, I carry an HP Elite X3. An iPhone 7 Plus and a Google Pixel XL. I'm a Verizon subscriber, and so at the moment that means that I can't actually put a SIM in the Pixel XL. I just actually switched from AT&T a few days ago for reasons that I will not bore listeners with right now. My primary SIM has been in an iPhone 7 Plus for a while, but I think as of the Google Pixel, Android is essentially beaten Apple, and I just think it's a way better device, and you know, so that's sort of the one that I have the sim in. But if I can ever get an Elite X3 on Verizon, I will happily stick my sim in that as well.
Yeah, Mark.
My daily driver is an iPhone 7, regular size one, but I also carry a Nokia Lumia Icon, which is the US variant, I guess. I should say the Verizon variant of the 930, so the HD display and, which is a wonderful device, but my daily driver is the iPhone right now. So
given that you've both got 1080p or QHD Lumias or Windows 10 mobile devices, is there still any consideration in the user interfaces you're designing, James, for people who are on lesser devices, for example a Lumia 640 with or 720p?
I think here I will have to profess ignorance and just confirm, does that device actually run the anniversary update?
Yes, the Lumia 640, 735, 830, 930, 1520, all of those devices, they got the official upgrade to Windows 10 Mobile and also that therefore the official upgrade to Redstone. Yes,
I should know this. I feel very embarrassed that I don't. I think it's really down to the comment I made earlier about we've really, you know, the next when we go and do the UI over and sort of enhance it, we really want to make sure it scales from the smallest to the biggest screen really well. At the moment, it probably doesn't. So I think it's great feedback to hear that. And, you know, if there are users out there that care, then it'd be great to hear and see, you know, is this actually something that people really want? Because, you know, you definitely, as a developer, often carry the higher end devices and you sort of get very used to having that nice screen real estate and density. It definitely behooves us to make sure that we do look at the 720p devices and keep users there happy as well. But as I say, I think we want to focus as much as possible on building a great adaptive UI. So if you're on a desktop Windows device and you scale the window down tiny to, you know, an analogous size to a 720p resolution, you know, little tiny window, it should work just as well there as well.
Yeah, I think the Windows 10 Mobile display scaling, I think that handles a lot of it for you. I don't think you'll have too much work, but just wanted to make sure that one of you at least had a 720p screened phone you could do some testing on at some point.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to think, you know, we both have multiple other test devices, and I think I'm spacing on exactly which one I had. I think I had the 5 series lower end one, and then I think I got, so it's just there's a whole bunch in the drawer and they need dusting off is really the message here.
Yeah, you could probably get a Lumia 640 for not very many dollars over there, so maybe scrounge one of them.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
From work.
James has that luxury.
Windows phones are kind of in an odd place now, really, because no one's actually really making them. I mean, HP are making the Elite X3 in small numbers. They've got the Idol 4S Windows made by Alcatel just on one carrier in the States. And there are a couple of very, very niche players around the world. But there's very little hardware being made. So should Microsoft have carried on manufacturing Lumias longer? My gut feeling is they stopped a few months too soon.
It's interesting as a somebody external to the company who's a fan of the operating system and devices with an app on the platform to watch. Yes, because we haven't really seen anything, have we, since the 950s and the 950 XL, which was, when was that announced? Last year, I guess.
That was the end of 2015. That was September 2015. Yeah. So it's a bit
Of course, we're in 2017.
Yeah,
now,
1 year, 4 months ago. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So it's been a while. I really hope they're going to continue to make stuff. And, you know, giving the rumor mill that I've read, there may be something branded as a Surface device now that Panos Panay is in charge of all devices, including phone, you know. But it wouldn't surprise me if there's something coming soon. And I really don't think Microsoft is going to just abandon the phone form factor. Obviously, we saw in the news recently, the announcements about Windows 10 on ARM, which technically a phone form factor is, isn't it? It's Windows 10 on ARM with cellular in there. So maybe there's something coming in the pipe. But I mean, I can only speak to all the rumors right now, but I seriously hope there's something coming that the fans can be excited about. Yeah,
it's quite hard to explain to people, really, because there's this thing about Windows 10 on ARM, and I think, well, hang on a minute, we've been using Windows 10 on ARM for the last 2 years. Windows 10 Mobile Indeed. Is Windows 10 on ARM. What's the difference?
And I know.
Because the difference is all the desktop bloat and the desktop elements and the desktop modules which you need on a PC, which you don't necessarily need on the phone. So, but it's a very, very hard job trying to explain all this to the man in the street and the general reader to the site. So, pity me.
It is. It is. And I think, you know, we've all seen that video of Photoshop running on this new chipset. And that looks amazing. You know, I was one of the people who queued up and I bought the original Surface RT because I was excited about what was then Windows 8 on ARM and the promises it could bring. But that was difficult because it didn't run conventional desktop apps, aside from Office, of course, which was specifically compiled. But I think this new story looks very compelling if indeed the emulation shim performs well, which it looks to from that video, you know.
Yeah. So, what are your views on the X3 then, having used it for a while? I mean, I've had mine for about 4 or 5 months. I'm still a tiny bit underwhelmed, but any comments from you?
I actually really quite like it. I have a 950 as well, and I definitely prefer the HP, if I'm honest, because I just love the SoC is much faster. It's got lots of RAM, and I use a Microsoft the folding Bluetooth keyboard is use the mail app on it.
Yeah,
the one with the gap in the middle, which I really like because it works with all three of my devices. But I think that from those reasons, the screen size, the performance, and also just I don't know. There's just some X factor that makes me actually really quite like it. So I'm quite a fan. I'm running on that particular device. I'm running the anniversary update. I haven't tried putting any insider builds on it. And I gather from a friend at DevLead on Twitter who pings me about these things, told me that actually the insider builds run quite a lot faster than the one I'm using, which is interesting to hear. But no, I'm quite up on it, and I think the camera's reasonably okay. I it's definitely firmly in my pocket and with me all the time, and I'm a lover of it. I'd love to get some of the dock support and other things which I haven't purchased. I don't know, Steve, if you've in fact I think you did a review on the dock.
And you mean the workspace stuff, and we had a demonstration account set up for us very kindly by HP, so I was able to try all this out, and it's a tiny bit underwhelming because there are all sorts of ways you can access applications remotely and get out a do-it-yourself solution with your own server and so forth, but it might make sense for some companies. I still think it's a bit expensive. I was just going back to your point about Redstone 2 and the insider builds being faster than Redstone 1. I found exactly the same. I've done several benchmarking features on AWP where I found that the Lumia 950 XL running the Redstone 2 insider builds is quite a bit faster than the X3, and I can only put that down to the fact that Microsoft are improving the kernel and improving the code at a low level. So I'm quite optimistic for RS2.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely are, and you know, it's something that we tirelessly work on, and you know, I think that the strides that we've taken, you know, to refactor the operating system, slim it down, and really make, you know, this thing that we call One Core, which runs everywhere, work really efficiently on on all devices, including, you know, the sort of phone SoC style devices. You know, it's starting to pay dividends, and the great thing is, like, as we optimize it, we leverage that optimization across all the form factors. So it gets faster on Xbox, it gets faster on the phone, it gets faster on HoloLens, et cetera, because we have this sort of one core, at the root of everything.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to the X3 getting, well, I guess it'll be next spring, won't it, at March, April time, when the creators update hits mobile officially. Or maybe an extra month while HP dots its I's and crosses its T's, but hopefully not too long.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I mean, that device is one that I sort of keep as a whatever is the official, you know, release public thing is what I want on there, because I want to see, you know, what's the actual in-market experience like, and then I put the insider build on other devices. So
that's totally the way I am as well. When you're developing an app which is inherently unstable because you're ironing out bugs, I've found you definitely don't want a buggy OS beneath you. Otherwise, it's like, where's the problem? You know.
Yeah, I've got a table up on my whiteboard in front of my desk, and I've got 12 of my reference Lumias and Windows devices. And I actually had to write and keep adjusting on the whiteboard which build they're all on, i.e., Threshold, Redstone, release preview, Slow Ring, Fast Ring, because it just gets so insanely confusing. And as you say, you need to have almost one device on every single possible build, just so that you can test stuff and write about stuff.
Anyway, absolutely.
Welcome to my world. Absolutely. Anyway, I think we're going to run out of time there, so we'll say thank you very much for your time. Any last words from you, James?
Well, I mean, I think my last words are thanks for having us on the show. It's been really fun to chat, and I'm really looking forward to reading your next roundup of podcatchers, and we'll definitely be looking very closely at it and figuring out, you know, where we can do better and stuff. But you know, you do a great job, and I love your site, love your show. You know, keep it up, Steve. You rule.
Thank you very much. Any last words from you, Mark?
Likewise, it's been a pleasure being on the show. We love what you do. You're a great champion for the community. And to the listeners, keep an eye out for Bringcast in the near future, and follow us on Twitter @Bringcast. And hopefully we'll have the final release out there very, very soon.
And of course, every other podcatcher developer is now going to want to come on the show and chat about their app for half an hour. But that's absolutely fine. But thank you for being the first, at least anyway. So, a goodbye from James and Mark. And we will catch you on the next All About Windows Phone Insight podcast, hopefully with Mr. Rafe Blandford back. Bye for now.